This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show for your Thursday. Matt Patrick here today. Patrick, we are what we call chock full today. Dr. Joe Eastman coming up here in just a little bit. Also, from the executive director for Protect Minnesota is Rashmi Sunavaretna. Rashmi Sunavaretna. She's going to join us coming up here in the 5 o'clock hour. Democrat of the day, 5:30. John Hest, 4B. That's Democratic territory, people. We need to get up there and make sure that that's the territory around it. Moorhead is Helen Keeler. Heather Keeler, excuse me, not Helen, Heather Keeler, that's 4A. 4B is John Hest. And that's a winnable seat, folks. We need to get up there and help him out. Patrick, do you like the ice cream?
I love ice cream.
You scream ice cream at the prices of ice cream. Axios Twin City has a price. It's getting pricey for ice cream, man.
No, it is. I'll let you tell your story, and then I've got a little anecdote.
Oh, well, let me hear your anecdote, my friend.
Oh, I was looking at I won't name the brands, but I was looking for at ice cream, and I'm like, okay, so this is like $5.99 for this pie, and then there's this other brand that's also really good, which was, I think, 3 pints for $1 more. I'm like, I can get 3 times as much for $1 more sold.
Well, it's of course, and of course, you have to eat it all of it now. But that's kind of how it goes. This is the average price. I don't want to necessarily. I guess I don't want to necessarily talk about the individual places. I mean, I'll let you go to the Axios Twin City story on this. But there's one that's for a cone for a single scoop is $5.50. There's also one for a single scoop. That's $2.69. It almost seems to me you could get two for the price of one there. That's not bad. DQ, a single scoop is, well, it's not a single scoop. It's the soft scoop. DQ is up to $3.39 for an ice cream cone? See, I'm going to be honest with you. I love ice cream. I am what I have talked about on this show. I think it's the curse of Minnesotans. I'm a seasonal eater. I can't have ice cream in the winter. I can't. I mean, I'm not saying it's not delicious. Of course it is. But I'm like, if I have my choice, I don't necessarily want ice. I don't want ice cream there. Strawberry rhubarb pie. I have to have a strawberry rhubarb pie late May, early June. Have to. But if I'm in a restaurant and I'm trying to order pie in, say, October, I have no interest in strawberry rhubarb. Have no interest. I just made, because I had Easter, split pea soup. So I have a ham bone, chuck, make a stock, Carl Weathers, Arrested Development. You put that in some water, boil it up. You got a soup. You got a stew. You do. Thanks, Carl. I make split pea soup. I love split pea soup. When I was a kid, you'd have it every Easter. Lots of fresh cracked pepper, nice and spicy. Yes. Can't have, I mean, even in the heart of winter, it doesn't feel right. I'm a seasonal eater. Tomato salads. You know the ones where the mozzarella, the basil, a little balsamic vinegar, olive oil?
Oh, I love that stuff.
Oh, love those in summer. You put one of those in front of me in February, not a chance. Not a chance. Not happening. I was looking at turkeys. When Easter, I was doing Easter shopping, I was looking, they had turkeys. And I guess some people could have a turkey. I have a turkey at Thanksgiving. And granted, I do a lot with that turkey. I not only have the turkey dinner, I make the turkey soup, I make some turkey tetrazzini. Nah, love it. But the idea of doing turkey in March, that's just not me. I've had enough people tell me that that's how they grew up too, that there was always things you ate seasonally. And thank God my parents never got me into dandelion greens. Matt, go out in the yard and start digging it up. What? All right. No, I'm glad I never got into that. But it is getting pricey out there. If you do get a, if you decide to partake, understand it can it's going to cost you. But it is ice cream. Come on, come on. You know you want it. You know you want it. I sound like the creepiest fan, OnlyFans page out there, don't I? It is, of course, there is an OnlyFans page with my name on it, so you'd better go find it if you can. I hear I'm in the top 97%, so I don't know what that means. I have no idea what the hell's below me, but all right. 952-946-6205. Why don't you dig up Dr. Joe, if you can. Dr. Joe Eastman here, because we're going to have our modeling expert on to talk a little bit about the way things are going right now, because I'm not quite sure things are going in the right direction. Case in point, the Minnesota coronavirus update for today. COVID update 19 update for today, 1,122 newly reported cases, 3 newly reported deaths. State's COVID-19 death toll now is 12,482. Today's update includes case data that was reported in the 24-hour period ending at 4 a.m. on Wednesday. So that's just a one-day total, just a one-day total that is over 1,000. Cases are, as the story here says, cases are beginning to creep back up. Are they? Yeah, that's not creeping. That's kind of leaping. How about we say it like that? In fact, more than 1,100 cases reported Monday marks the first time in more than 2 months that 1,000-plus cases in the 24-hour reporting period. And I mentioned that the yesterday that I was driving past one of the testing centers, and the testing center, for the first time I was looking at that testing center, it was actually full in a while. I mean, that was the most car. I saw a ton of cars out there. That was, yeah. I was a little concerned about that, and things seem to be, picking up a little bit. The coronavirus variant currently dominant is, as Dr. Joe Eastman mentioned a few months ago, is going to be BA2. That's what we're seeing. That's the vast majority of it out there right now. Through April 20th, the number of people with COVID-19 hospitalized in Minnesota, 215. That's up from 212 reported on April 19th. Of those hospitalized, 24 people are in intensive care, up from 23, 191 in non-ICU care. That's up from 189. As of April 19th, the state reported that 3,903,613 people have received at least one dose of the COVID-19 vaccine, while 3,695,710 people have completed the vaccine series, and 2,553,336 people up to date on their vaccines. 1,442,396 people have gotten sick with coronavirus in the state of Minnesota. Dr. Joe Eastman is, of course, a man who worked with NASA. He's worked with the LTER. He also Colorado State University. He's currently part of the University of Texas Austin COVID modeling team, and he's kind enough today to join us to talk a little bit more in depth about COVID. Dr. Joe, thank you very much. I appreciate the time, my friend.
Thank you very much. You're getting me hungry with this ice cream reporting. Oh, my gosh.
It's delightful. Well, your ice cream up there, you're up on the range there. Where are you? Grand Rapids? Where at?
Yeah, Bowie.
Okay. Is there an ice cream place open up there right now, or is you just go get a scoopful of what's outside still?
Exactly. If I don't get my nightly bowl, I go into grump mode.
Oh, I don't think Dr. Joe has a grump mode per se. He's got a serious mode, but I don't know if he's got a grump mode. All right, I want to add, if we can start, let's go back to BA2, the variant of Omicron. You yourself correctly said it's going to be the dominant strain here in a few months. Here we are. A little bit more information about it. I mean, is it similar to the Omicron, where it was very contagious, but it wasn't as deadly or leading to as many hospitalizations as the Delta variant did?
Yeah. Currently at the moment, they've just uncovered a new one in New York. It's the BA2 12.1, or it has, remember we talked about that spike protein variant, L452R. Well, it's got one called L452Q. And that's making up about 90% of the cases now. And it's about 32% more. Your new word of the day,
okay,
is fusogenic.
Fusogenic.
Yeah, people probably haven't heard of that, but it also is more, has a higher fusogenicity, which means the cell membranes confuse with other cell membranes at a higher rate, which means it just reproduces faster because it also has a faster glycolysis. It breaks down sugars faster, creating our well-known ATP for energy. And that's what makes it spread more, is because it loads up quicker and reproduces quicker.
Let's just piggyback into what happened. A lunatic judge down in Florida basically says face masks, even though they themselves acknowledge they stop virus spread, they said that the federal government has no right to do this. They get rid of the federal mask mandate. Airlines are now mask free. As we see this spread, I mean, this, I'm going to presume your feeling is this is a really bad idea.
This is a very bad idea. Just in general, mask wearing should be still be followed everywhere, but jeepers, creepers. I was thinking of taking a trip this summer, but in my condition, I can't go on a plane. I'm fearful of it, and I know there's a lot of other immunosuppressed people like myself that are in the same boat. There's no way we're getting on a plane, you know?
5 hours, yeah, 5 hours in a confined space with recycled air, and you're hoping that everyone there is healthy. I mean, that's just, at least someone's going to even have the cold, let alone at least five or six of those people are going to have coronavirus.
That's correct. And then if you get stuck in the rear, that's where most of the stale air ends up, is in the back of the plane. You get stuck back there, I mean, you might as well just take deep breaths and, you know, I'm going to get it now. Oh, dear.
Well, let me ask you this. So, because I saw the footage of the pilots out there. Hey, great news, everybody. You can take your mask off. Am I crazy, or is in 3 weeks all these airlines are going to have massive staffing shortages because their own pilots and stewardesses and stewards are all going to get sick, correct?
It's inevitable. It really is. It will happen. And the thing is, I just found a little tiny bug in my model, and I wasn't aging the vaccines correctly, and now I am, and all of a sudden I'm starting to get a spike that will increase until about mid-May in the state. And I just got off talking to my wife, and at the place, healthcare facility she works, all of a sudden the infections, people that are fully vaccinated and boosted are getting this darn thing right now. It's just starting here in Minnesota. It's just going to get worse for the next month.
We do have on the positive side, I guess, if this is a positive thing, we had so many people that got Omicron, the original variant of Omicron. And we also have a pretty good ratio of people vaccinated and boosted. I'm going to get my second booster shot. You got a second booster shot already?
Yes, I did about 2 weeks ago.
So we're looking at, I mean, we probably are not going to see the spike we saw with the original Omicron, but we definitely are going to see a spike, correct?
That's correct. It will be about between one-seventh to one-tenth of what we saw in January. I mean, it won't be huge, but it will be a little more deadly, probably about two times more deadly, and it's currently 32% more contagious, this new one. So we're looking at some trouble coming up here. And, Moderna just came out with an Omicron-specific vaccine, and I'm not sure what the status of that is and where it's going, but the way things are right now in the state of the CDC and NIH, God only knows what's going to happen here in the next month or so. It's a big mess right now. Nobody can seem to get on the same page. The retired director of the NIH. I'll send you his op-ed that just came out, and he's got some lessons learned that I think are pretty valuable, and we need to rethink this through in a coherent, you know, lessons learned pattern, and that's going to take some time. So don't look for any improvements in the short term.
And once again, Dr. Joe Eastman, our COVID modeling expert, kind enough to join us today. I go around. I'm in the cities here. I went to the Y today. I ran. I did okay. And I'm in the gym, no one's wearing a mask. I mean, no one is wearing a mask. No one, the employees, none of the other people working out. And you and I talked. Yeah, I think one of the first times you and I talked privately, well before you started coming on the air, I think this was back in 2020, you said, gyms are the worst place because, you know, you got everyone's heavy breathing and right in a fairly close confines. There's no really way to escape it. I think it's, you know, as I look at this, I it is really disturbing to see how many people are pandemic over. They think there's no danger and no problem. And not only are you seeing that this is going to come back, but you and I have also talked about some of these communities where there is very few vaccinations or substantially less than the rest of the state. It's going to get really bad there again.
Exactly. And what the model is showing me is the suburbs of the cities and rural areas are, with this new variant, are starting to peak more, grow at a faster rate than what we've seen. There's also another one. I can't even list the number that's on the variants of concern at the World Health Organization right now. It's a huge list, and they're all subvariants of BA2.
Why is it incredible? Can I ask you, why is that? What about the BA2, which once again, it says a subvariant of the original Omicron, but what about that subvariant has made it so malleable, I guess, that you can get so many different variants out of it?
Yeah, the fusogenicity of it is incredible. The mutations we're seeing are in the spike protein, which is responsible for basically hooking on to our cells in our body, and it's just increasing the rate that the subvariant could do that, and all these variations are in the spike protein. They may be just one spike protein, most of them are, and I'm seeing lambda variants pop up. You remember that was quite a while ago.
Yeah. They're starting to come back again,
and they're starting to come back because they're getting this same mutation on the spike protein. I'm at a point where I'm a little confused what exactly I got to put in the model at the moment. I usually have three variants floating around in the model, and right now I just started up with five. I think I'm going to have to increase that even more to deal with it. And that just leads to more sources of error for me, because the reporting on this darn stuff is getting lax.
A little. Have you noticed that too? Oh my God, no one is really covering this now.
It's horrible, and that just adds fuel to the fire that people think this damn thing is over.
You know, you have 1,000 cases today, 1,000 new cases today reported by the Minnesota Department of Health. That's, you know, that we were down to, I think it was, you know, 500, 600 in a day, and we were like, okay, this is getting in a good position at least, but now it's coming back, and of course, as we know with this, the case spike, the hospitalization spike is going to come down in about a week or so as well.
That's right. And same with the death rates. You know, you have that lag too. We'll start getting a better idea of this bugger over the next month or so. Right now, I'm just pulling numbers out of the hat the best I can, and hopefully provide some more guidance to the Itasca community, our county health department that I've been working with for about 5 months. She's gotten to the point where she trusts my forecast more than the information she gets from others. So,
Dr. Joe, you worked for NASA. Quite literally, you're a rocket scientist. So, you know, I'm going to go with your call on this. You're smarter than me. So, take your lead. So, once again, I want to wrap this up, but I got one other thing to share with you in just a second. But once again, get vaccinated and for God's sakes, wear your mask because this is not over for the time being.
That is darn right.
Especially if you're on a flight.
And distance, not 6 feet. Try to go 10 feet if you possibly can.
Okay. Well, some of this, that's kind of what most people do anyway. But, you know, social distance, wear a mask, get vaccinated. These are not new things. We've been talking about them. The pandemic's not over, so please take advantage of this. One last thing has nothing to do with coronavirus, but it's going to give you even a bigger scare. Representative Rick Hansen, who is a fan of the show, and I'm a fan of his, he is, of course, working on the environmental committee bill. And he's been one of these people that's been looking at chronic wasting disease, the disease that's showing up in deer.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the chronic wasting disease. Apparently, there's a new study that says that, indeed, the chronic wasting disease, what is it, the cervid prions that are cause the chronic wasting disease can, indeed, jump to humans if in the right scenario. So I got bad news. This is one of those things where I once again, COVID, the feeling is it came from the animal kingdom into the ocean, where we could potentially be looking at another one here in Minnesota with chronic wasting disease.
That's correct. In fact, I was just before the show started an article on just that subject. I was just starting to read it. And, you know, over 70% of the deer herd in like Ohio is infected with stuff. So it's pretty prevalent. It's and you know, like I said before, the spillover, you got to have an alignment of the gods basically to have it happen. But it looks like we're getting close to that point with this chronic wasting disease. I don't know where to go with that one.
Well, and once again, once it does, all it takes is one time and it's gone. It's going to run. And that's the trouble. But don't worry. Here's the good news, Dr. Joe. The Republicans in Minnesota have vowed to do nothing to stop this. So,
and,
sweet
and
Lord.
The testing rates have gone way down. So we don't even know what the heck is out there.
No, this is, you know, it's. I appreciate your knowledge. I appreciate your science, your numbers. I know you don't, you know, you're kind of trying to do this on the fly as things are changing out there in your calculations left and right. But I trust your calculations. You know, it's the reality is this is that our warnings are only as good as the people are willing to heed them. And that is the problem here. Is that there's just not enough people right now, whether it's talking about coronavirus and the next version of it, or the potential of the next coronavirus coming down the line, unless people are willing to heed the advice, these things are destined to happen.
You're absolutely correct, and I thank you for providing the service you do with informing people. And again, I post my new forecast on my Twitter profile, so people can look at that. And a new one should be coming out later tonight with new numbers and new variants. So
if you type in Jelly Roll Blues into Twitter, Jelly Roll Blues, you'll find Dr. Joe Eastman. And I'll, of course, link to him on my social media. Dr. Joe, as always, an absolute privilege. Go get yourself an ice cream. You've deserved it.
Yes, raspberry sherbet coming up.
Raspberry sherbet. We'll get you some of that. Dr. Joe Eastman, thank you very much. I appreciate the time. Let's take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Wear your mask, people. That's I don't know what else I can say. Wear your mask, for goodness sakes. 952-946-6205. By the way, connecting to this a little bit here, Delta Airlines said on Wednesday it plans to restore flight privileges to about 2,000 customers who were barred from flights after failing to comply with mask rules. The Biden administration on Monday said it would no longer enforce the U.S. mask mandate on public transportation and airlines after a federal judge struck down the directive as unlawful. Atlanta-based Delta will restore passengers only after each case is reviewed and each customer demonstrates an understanding of their expected behavior when flying with us. Any further disregard for the policies that keep us all safe will result in placement on Delta's permanent no-fly list. Now, the reason I'm bringing this up is we had the story yesterday of Eric Mortensen, the representative from Shakopee. Yeah, way out there. Anyway, he apparently had a, you know, confrontation with the Delta Airlines people over masks, and they basically banned him. Is he going to be allowed on that? And is there any way in the world Delta Airlines could broadcast the meeting they have with him after, as they talk about, they're reviewing each case? Could you broadcast his case review where they tell him to his face any further behavioral problems in your band? I would love to watch that. Oh, I would love to watch that. Basically, do you understand the rules, sir? Yes, I do. Please let me back on the airline. I don't know what he'd say. That's one hypothetical situation. I don't know what he would say. But it will be interesting. The change will, by the way, will not impact Delta's separate list of about 1,000 people who or is Eric Mortensen on that list? I don't know. He demonstrated the 1,000 people that are on this list, and I'm not sure if Eric Mortensen is on this list, demonstrated egregious behavior that are already on the permanent no-fly list. Delta said of the 2,000 passengers barred over mask violations, any further disregard of the policies that keep us safe will result in the placement on Delta's permanent no-fly list. The airline has urged the Justice Department to back a federal permanent no-fly list for those who exhibit egregious or violent behavior. So these are the people that when they went up and told them, you got to wear a mask, you got to wear a mask, they went, they started throwing haymakers. They started throwing haymakers and started, I'll tell you what, I'm going to tell you what we got to do. 952-946-6205. Just, you know, direct line to Patrick here. Do we have one or two commercial breaks we got to get in here for the rest of the day? We got two? I really ran late with Dr. Joe, didn't I? All right. Let's take a break. Come on back. I got into, Republicans being Republicans. When we do return, it is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. So I want to make sure you understand. I mean, there's a lot of problems going on here in the state of Minnesota. How about the price of childcare? Wow, extraordinary, right? And, you know, I know that the House has had some hearings on that. I'm not sure if the Senate has had any on there. And generally, the Republican Senate, you can tell what they do. They very much politicize whatever they're investigating. I mean, I'll give you a great example of this. Amir Locke was shot in a residence he was allowed to be in carrying a legally licensed gun. I mean, isn't that the fear of every far-righto gun kook in this country? Is that jackbooted thugs are going to come in and kick in the door and shoot you, even because you just got your own legitimate gun that you are having in your own residence. I mean, isn't that it? I mean, this is, if this was what they should be going crazy for this story. They should be like, how dare they? My gosh, this is exactly what Republicans have been screaming about happening for years, for years. This is the jackbooted thugs coming on in here. But yet, is there any Republican hearings on it in the Senate? Is any Republican pulling in police officers from Minneapolis and asking, what did you do? Why did you do this? Why did you shoot a legal gun owner in their own house? No, not at all. Not in the least bit. They could care less. And the reason why is that even though this is supposedly one of their bread and butter issues, gun rights, a black guy got shot. That's what the reality is. And it was a legally carrying black man in a residence that he was entitled to be in who hadn't done a damn thing wrong. Yet, it's okay. Philando Castile was the same way. He got gunned down. He was a legal gun owner. And you cannot trust the psychopathic cop that shot him up for his own version of the story because he needed a defense for gunning him down by for after when he just said, I've got a legal gun. I'm a legal gun, Harry. A bang. So, yeah, no, you'd think that there'd be hearings on this. Nope. No. Because they don't, this is, even though this is their bread and butter issue, they're not going to bring in, they're not going to have Senate hearings on this. They're not going to, and this is the important thing you have to remember. They will always, always go crazy about something where, in the case of Merrill Lock, it's not the black person that looks bad, it's the police that look bad. And even though that black person was, once again, a poster child for what they've been screaming about, a legal gun owner in their own house, legally carrying, getting gunned down, they'll ignore that because the victim there, the undeniable victim, was black. But when they can go down and they have something where a minority or a poor person has done something wrong, they cannot get enough hearings in the Senate. We need them. We need answers now. And that is who they are. So they're looking into this new state nutrition program oversight after the problems there. And I'll be the first. I'm going to say this. Yeah, there clearly was some problems. Some people clearly were in that to take advantage of it. And by the way, should mention charter schools. You should, by the way, you want a funny stat. You know how Republicans love charter schools? My God, are they rife with fraud. Rife with fraud. But they're not going to have an investigation of that because charter schools are something they champion. So once again, there, it's something they don't want people to look at the fraud that's involved with charter schools. So they kind of ignore that. But here, they're going to go crazy because at the end of the day, the most important thing for Republicans is to put forward an issue where it looks like we're reining those black people in. And I mean, they're not saying that, but that's really the message. We got to, you know, look at what happened here. We need to get in there and give oversight to this problem. Now, you don't need to give oversight to Amir Locke getting gunned down by cops. Well, no. We don't want to talk about that. You don't want to give oversight to charter schools that also abuse the system? No. We like charter schools. But all of a sudden, they can go after the minority population or another thing they love to go over, a program which they despise, which is funny considering a lot of them claim they're Christian, feeding hungry people. I know. A lot of Republicans would love to get rid of all, you know, food aid and basically tell, let them starve a few days. Then they'll get the idea they need to go get a job. You know, it's not really easy to get a job when you're starving to death. But they're Christian. Like I said, most Republicans have ripped the Gospel of Matthew out of their Bibles. They have no idea that Jesus is like, you got to feed those people as a Christian? Not on my watch. You know, that sort of thing. Healthcare, you say? No way in over my dead body, or well, their dead body. I mean, that's how you look at it. I mean, Christian Republicans are a hoot. Ask them about the Gospel of Matthew. They'll look at you glass eyed, like, how dare you question my complete ignoring of Jesus's teachings? Yeah, that's how they do it. Anywho. The Republicans, if they can go on out there and make it look like to their supporters, we're reining those black people in. They love that. They will stretch that issue out for weeks and months if they can. They love that. But it's also an opportunity for them to say, this is why we shouldn't be giving any money at all to food programs to feed hungry people. They'll use the one bad example to try to get rid of the entire program if they can, because that's their modus operandi. That's what they're trying to do. They're trying to go out there and kill this program. So any violation, what do you mean there's one woman getting an extra food stamp every month? See what waste and fraud. Don't give anyone any food. See, we've solved the problem. Funny story, though. They don't hold that same standard, though, when it's something they like a Republican. When it comes to, what was that story that 10% of the Minneapolis Police Department has been reprimanded? Is that what it is? Yeah, it's 10% of the Minneapolis police force was disciplined. So that's not just an apple in the bunch. That's a good portion. That's 10% of the bunch is bad. But Republicans will be the first to say, it's like, how dare you look at that and try to extrapolate out for the entire program? That's just, you know, that's, you just got to look at the individual case and nothing else. Every other cop is great. You know, that's how their mentality is. Or when it's like it's a wealthy person who's caught, you know, cheating on taxes, and people say, well, we need to have tax reform. Whoa. So one guy cheats the tax code. And by the way, I can completely understand why. Who doesn't love money? But they cheat the tax code. And now all of a sudden you want to punish everybody by basically enforcing the tax code. How dare you? That's kind of the Republican way. They will always insist any problem, transportation. Oh, there's a problem with the Southwest Right Rail Line. We'll shut down every light rail line and leave them there as a memorial to government waste. Really? That's pretty stupid, you morons. But that's who you are. That's who they are. They will always look for a problem as justification to basically go through with their insanely anti-Christian mentality when it's something they hate. But when it's something they love, how dare you say there needs to be more oversight of this? Exactly. Let's get into the most recent version of this as I play it out. Once again, these are generics, generals. I'm going to get into some specifics in the story, but this is what I've noticed over the years following Republicans. They're a hoot. Minnesota education officials on Wednesday defended the state's management of the federal nutrition funds to lawmakers during a third legislative hearing. Have they had one hearing about police brutality? How about the Stallings videos? Have they had one hearing about those? No, they have no intention. Never going to happen. They're not going to, they don't want to give the message to their supporters that somehow they might be actually trying to help the black community. Oh, okay. All right. The third legislative hearing about the nutrition program fraud alleged to have taken place early in the pandemic. Minnesota Department of Education leadership told members of the Senate Education Committee the FBI investigation into the nonprofit Feeding Our Future for allegedly misusing federal funds is a sign the agency's internal controls worked. FBI investigators say leaders of the nonprofit spent tens of millions of dollars intended to feed low-income children on cars and lakefront properties instead. MDE Assistant Commissioner Darren Corte and Monica Herrera, nutrition director, echoed arguments made in earlier hearings by Commissioner Heather Mueller and Chief Financial Officer Denise Anderson. They didn't seem to satisfy Education Committee Chair Roger Chamberlain. Hey! Go see, just Google images of Roger Chamberlain. See if that one where he's flashing the white power's hand gesture comes on up. Yeah, that guy. He led the charge. Oh, I didn't realize. I thought it was an okay sign. Sure you did, Raj. Sure you did. Now, once again, I want to make sure we understand something. Just as we put this out, once again, there is a problem here, and definitely this there needed to be more oversight. And there are some people that came in there that were trying to steal from the program, undeniably. But notice how third hearing, they're bringing everyone in. Have they brought in more than one person to talk about ever in the Senate to talk about police misconduct in Minneapolis? Ever? Nope. This is what they're going to bank on this. They're preparing their ad campaigns as those black people. I mean, those people, in air quotes, in Minneapolis, we rein them in. We're going to make sure they starve. I don't know what they're going to do, but they're going to. This is part of the whole plan. This is part of their plan. We are not very much closer to getting where we need to be in this legislative body to understand for the people while this is properly managed, that this was properly managed, Chamberlain said before adjourning the hearing. Oh, got your sound quote in there, didn't you, Raji? Roger Dodger. The FBI raided offices in St. Anthony-based Feeding Our Future, which managed more than 100 meal sites throughout the federal programs early in the pandemic in January as part of an investigation into what agents say was a large and complicit scheme to defraud the government. Feeding Our Future CEO Amy Bach has been doing, and nobody has been charged so far in connection with the investigation. By the way, Bach has said she's willing with her lawyer to come testify, and apparently Roger Chamberlain doesn't want anything to do with that. I don't know why. That would seem to me to be getting to answers. Minnesota education officials said they raised concerns about Feeding Our Future with the U.S. Department of Agriculture, which runs the food programs, in the summer of 2020, after the organization reported a rapid increase in the number of sites it managed. MDE also began denying Freedom of Future's site applications that year. The nonprofit sued in response, and the judge ordered MDE to resume payments. In April of 2021, MDE contacted the FBI, and the FBI began an investigation the next month. So basically, they saw something was going on. They tried to stop it. The courts basically said, you can't stop it. And by the way, is Roger Chamberlain calling in that judge to ask him why he ruled that way? No, of course not. The Department of Education did what they were doing their due diligence, and they were the ones that contacted the FBI. Chamberlain repeatedly asked Corte and Herrera whether agency staff discussed visiting Feeding Our Future's meal sites when the organization reported surging numbers of meal sites and meals served. For example, court documents say Safari Restaurant in Minneapolis claimed to serve 5,000 meals a day, more students than some of the state's highest high schools. The USDA requires state agencies to conduct periodic meal program site visits, but they offered waivers early in the pandemic as the COVID-19 precaution. But Raj apparently thinks, no, you should have jeopardized your own health to go out there and inspect them. Now! Now! Roger Chamberlain's a hack. He is. He's just an absolute hack. Basically, most states, including Minnesota, applied to receive the exemption. Chamberlain criticized MDE's decision to use the waivers, asking Corte whether a more extensive and comprehensive site visit plan would have been a good idea. Corte reiterated points made. I mean, the hindsight being 2020. First of all, I'm going to say it sounds to me like the Minnesota Department of Education did a pretty good job at realizing something was wrong here and trying to stop it, having the court say you can't, then approaching the FBI. But Chamberlain is desperately trying to turn this into you, what did you know and when did you know it sort of thing. We have almost 11,000 sites in the state and limited amounts of staff, said Corte. The site monitoring process is not something that necessarily used to uncover fraud or criminal activity. We're not investigators, so it's to ensure compliance with federal regulations. So, but heaven forbid, once again, Raj is not too concerned about what's really going on here. This is about, we're going to hold certain people under control. We need the white Republicans of the Senate to get in there and start controlling this and start cracking noggins. We need to get in there and control it. That's what this is all about. It's dog and pony show because God forbid you actually hold these similar hittings to, I don't know, Raj. How about police brutality in Minneapolis? A clear problem. And even they actually shot a guy who was a legal gun owner in his own residence. You know, that's pretty bad. Have you seen the Stallings video there, Raji? You haven't? You probably should. But you see, is once again, you're not going to investigate that because you want to drive a narrative and your own supporters don't want you looking into bad cops or black people that have been wronged. You're basically driving a narrative about, oh, we got to get these people. We got to get these people. Wink. Those people, you know, wink, wink, wink. There's a problem here. MDE, Minnesota Department of Education, they did the right thing. But this is very Republicans calling for a full investigation into Julie Blaha. No, dude, that's just you trying desperately to create an issue. And you're pathetic at it. You all are just pathetic at it. Hold them accountable, but don't do this dog and pony show, especially when, fine, you don't want to look into police brutality in Minneapolis? Fine. How about you look into the cost of daycare and have multiple hearings on that? Oh, that's right. You don't care about that. Or the people of the state of Minnesota. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Kissy, Raj. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. I can't show. By the way, the story I kind of referred to about the Minneapolis police, this one from the Reformer from Racket as well. In the past 2 years, about 10% of the Minneapolis police force was disciplined. That comes out to 78 cops, or as Republicans will say, hey, give them a 79th chance. Oh. By the way, that's more than the past five preceding years combined. This is just the latest indication of the Minneapolis Police Department in crisis. The reformer's Dino Winter writes, for those just tuning in, previous indications include instigating unrest by assaulting civilians, responding to justified public criticism by creating a work slowdown, and killing people in the street and in their homes. The increase in discipline likely has less to do with any self-generated concern of accountability within the department than with a court order requiring the chief to act on recommendations from the Office of Police Conduct Review within 30 days. The most common discipline, a letter of reprimand and suspension. Only 9 officers were terminated in that 2-year time period. Were any of the officers who opened fire on the people of South Minneapolis 3 days after George Floyd and the Stallings video? You know, the ones that were basically trying to defend the honor of the white nationalist groups? Yeah, those guys. Any of those guys that opened fire on Stallings unannounced and then beat him in the street with the other guy? Any firings there? No? No? Are you still looking into it? Gonna make sure they get their retirement in? It is... It's not one in the bunch. Let's just use the bushel of apples scenario. If you went and got a bushel of apples and 10% of them were bad, would you pay for the bushel of apples? No, you wouldn't. You'd say, whoa, you give me a whole bunch of bad apples. I went over to the farmer's market. I was buying cukes for pickles 1 year. And I buy the bucket and I start pouring them in a bag and I get... the top layer comes off, and they were all moldy underneath. I said, whoa, what's all this? And I was, oh, those are fine. I said, no. Give me another bucket. He was trying to pull a fast one on me. No. That's not a slight problem you got there. But good news, they've got reams of paper for those letters of reprimand. Thank God we're getting finally some justice. That's called sarcasm. Hour 2, that's coming up next. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. By the way, John Hest is going to join us coming up here in a little bit. 4B up, basically, it's the partner district to 4A up by Morehead. He's running as the DFL up there as Democrat of the Day. He'll join us coming up in a little bit to talk about his campaign. Right now, kind enough to join us is Rashmi Sunavaretna. She is the Executive Director of Protect Minnesota. Protect Minnesota promotes a culture of health and safety for all Minnesotans by preventing gun violence through research, legislation, education, and community investment. And they're ramping up their campaign for more awareness here as we get towards the summer. First of all, thank you very much, Rashmi, for joining us today. We were supposed to talk last week, so I appreciate you being able to come on today.
Of course, and thanks for having us.
My absolute pleasure. Talk, first of all, a little bit about the organization and the purpose of this organization.
The purpose is really simple. We use a lot of words and mission statements and whatnot, but it's really just to keep Minnesotans safe from firearm deaths and violence and injuries. And how we do that kind of is a multifaceted approach, and we can talk about that later. But it's really just to keep people safe.
The real crisis here is that we have an epidemic of gun violence. I've watched just in my radio career, watching as Republicans and a handful of Democrats as well have pushed more guns everywhere under this fake argument that guns make us safer. And right now, we quite literally have constant deaths, constant shootings of 3, 4, 5 people nationwide almost every day. We have pretty much a mass shooting in this country. It really is an epidemic that just no one wants to talk about.
That's exactly what it says. And I think one of the issues as we talk to more community members, like, we want results, right? Like, we want solutions. But the NRA has done a really great job of messaging around the Second Amendment issue. And you can still have the Second Amendment, but I feel like the bigger issue is people are losing their lives. And most of them are kids, right? Mm-hmm. So what does that say about us as a nation that we're fine that kids are being killed?
And it does seem like when you do talk to people about regulation, oh, they're all for it when it comes to the minority population in the large cities. They need to be reined in, get the guns off the streets there. But we just had a year or so ago, a person out in Buffalo, a white man who was clearly mentally deranged and was allowed to buy a gun. And the local sheriff, I think it was the Wright County Sheriff, said, the way the law is written, I can't stop that guy from getting a gun. And there is seems to be no intent on trying to say, well, maybe we should, you know, prevent the people who have clearly been mentally compromised from getting guns. I mean, there is this double standard that exists that it basically seems to exist to prevent anything good from getting done.
No, I think you're 1,000% right. And, you know, if you look at the statistics, and the latest ones I have are from 2020, 68% of firearm deaths were actually suicide. The majority of them were white males in rural Minnesota. And we don't talk about that, right? We focus on inner city Minneapolis shootings. But statistically, like, there is a crisis here that's happening, and we're not talking about it. And, you know, it's just this, you mentioned firearms, and everyone just kind of shuts down. And the thing I think is really funny is, and by funny, I don't mean hilarious, is that, like, the Gun Owners Caucus tends to put up a roadblock every time we even attempt to provide a solution, but they never actually provide a solution. Their constituency is killing themselves off at an alarming rate. And all they do is just fight every attempt at a solution.
You're exactly right about it. And they created a narrative. So when we do have one of these insanely horrific mass shootings in this country, the argument is you can't talk about that until the grieving is done. And then once the grieving is done, they're saying, why are you still holding on to that tragedy? We need to move on. They've created a way to prevent themselves from ever having to deal with this. And the reality is, you know, that's by design. It is quite literally a lot of people controlled by the gun caucus and the bullet caucus. Let's not forget them. They're in there as well. They basically want their product on the street and everywhere you can go. And there just doesn't seem to be, it seems to be too many roadblocks. I mean, it's a popular idea. Gun control is a popular idea, not eliminating the Second Amendment, but common sense gun control is a popular idea. Last time I checked, it was in the 70%. Most people felt like we should have more rules to regulate guns.
Yeah, and I, you know, on some of the stuff that we're going to be proposing in an upcoming session are just common sense ones. So right now, there's no standardized training requirement as far as, like, how many, like when you do your conceal and carry, right? Like, you have to prove that you can be able to shoot a gun, but it depends on the trainer. Some will have you do more than one shot. Some will have you do a couple shots. There's no standardization. And so it goes back to this, you know, the line that they use is responsible gun ownership. Well, if you're a responsible gun owner, you should believe that, right? You should believe that if you're carrying for self-defense, the rest of the population needs to know that you can actually aim and shoot a gun. And so even those just, like, common sense, okay, let's make sure that people who are conceal and carrying are actually trained and know how to use it. I just don't understand why there's such a roadblock around that.
Well, it's so funny. You bring up that whole responsible gun ownership stuff. Then when someone does, shoot someone else, or they get shot accidentally, or you know, like the guy up in Duluth who got shot in two legs, and they found that guy up there in the Duluth area, the argument is, well, that guy, he wasn't a responsible gun owner. That's not the case. You should have done something about that. But then they don't ever propose anything to, address that in advance. And so henceforth, it's always a, well, you would have, should have, could have, but we're not going to change anything. And that's the insanity of it all.
Well, and I think part of it, too, is, like, the Colorado shooter, Aurora, was a legal gun owner. Kenosha was a legal gun owner. Vegas was a legal gun owner, right? All these some of the mass shooters get their guns legally. So that just isn't I mean, for lack of a better word, it's a stupid argument. Yes. And I also just want to say, the GOP is going into this kind of campaign season saying, oh, we're tough on crime. But statistically, if you look at the increase in violence with carjackings, there's guns involved, right? So this is actually a gun issue. And they aren't, they are the party that's soft on crime because they have done absolutely nothing on this.
Well, and once again, please go ahead.
No, I'm just talking about straw purchases, right? Like, yeah. It's so easy to stop that. It's so easy. And it's just, I honestly, like, one of the hardest parts of this job is, like, the common sense component isn't there.
Yes.
And I come at it as a mother who's first grader does active shooter drills, right? And it's like, really? This is what we're doing right now?
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's just, it's traumatizing to kids, first of all, but it's also just this, really, we can't get over this hoop?
No, and you just said it is. These people are the same people that think that, you know, shooter drills for, you know, six-year-olds is good character building. But, the Republicans give up the ghost when they the whole thing with Amir Locke. Here was a guy who was a legal gun owner in a legal residence who basically had it there and he was gunned down. And this is the argument Republicans have been making for decades. Jackbooted thugs kicking open a door and shooting a legal gun owner. And yet no Republican has come out and said anything about in the defense of Amir Locke. Meanwhile, if there's a shooting in North Minneapolis, it's all the guns need to be taken away from the black people. And that's kind of their narrative right now. That's what they thrive on. And that's not helping because, as you said, a lot of the gun violence, whether that's suicides, whether that's accidental shootings, whether that's full-fledged crimes, it doesn't just happen in Minneapolis. It happens statewide. And when it happens there, they can't sweep that under the rug fast enough.
Well, and that's part of what we're trying to do is to shed more light on that, right? Like they have this narrative, oh, it's them, it's black people, it's their issue, let's stop it from coming to our communities. But it's already there, and it's there at an incredibly alarming rate. Sorry, I just forgot what I was going to say, but it's just this, it's the hypocrisy of all of it.
Mm-hmm.
I will say, just to give credit where credit is due, the Gun Owners Caucus did come out against the no-knock warrants after Amir Locke. But at the same time, they didn't say anything when it was Philando Castile. And they're still pushing these stupid shoot-first laws behind the scenes, right? And just to be very clear, that's the law that killed Trayvon Martin. Mm-hmm. So it's a little hypocritical for them to stand up for Amir Locke, but then behind the scenes push for a bill that will... It's going to target black and brown men. I mean, that's just the reality of it.
Yeah. Take a look at how they're defending the shooting out in Grand Rapids, Michigan. My goodness. I mean, that was an execution. And yet they're still arguing, well, that was legit because, you know, the individual wasn't listening to police actions. I'm like, really? I just... They will always defend the gun, and that's just the insanity of it. Rashmi Sunivaretna is joining us, the executive director of Protect Minnesota. Rashmi, let's get into your agenda here. What are you looking for as your agenda coming up this summer?
So our agenda is just to get individuals who can actually care about their constituencies, right? Not caring about where the money's coming, but caring about the issues of suicide. And we're kind of switching a little bit and looking at root causes. Obviously, universal background checks work. We're going to work on that and push for that. But let's look at, one of the things that's happened with the carjackings, both in Minneapolis and St. Paul, most of them are actually teenagers and kind of high school age kids. So during COVID and people going to school from home, they were lost in the shuffle. And so COVID has really shown us that we don't have a lot of resources around for kids that age. And so it's easy to kind of pull them into gang activity or whatever it is. And there's a lot of books that talk about the research around that. So that's one of the issues talking about mental health. One way that we're hoping to kind of address that issue as firearms is to talk about when you get your permit to purchase or you get your conceal and carry, that you have to go through a training about suicide awareness and the resources that are out there, just so you have that knowledge. We're also doing a lot of work in rural Minnesota, having people talk about suicide. The more you hide it under the rug, the more it's going to happen. So we're kind of looking at it from a holistic approach, mm-hmm. looking at legislatively, looking at community work. We're not anti-gun. The guns are already out there. We don't judge anyone for having guns. In 2020 2020 after George Floyd, the increase in guns in Minneapolis, the permits to purchase were incredibly high. And again, going back to your comment about like, well, we don't want black people to have guns, but they're in a situation where they don't feel safe, right? Like, mm-hmm. we're not going to judge people. Do what you need to do to make safe, but we're going to make sure that you're doing it safely.
Have you had any positive? I mean, I think that, you know, trying to prevent suicides at the end of a gun is a very noble idea. And I to a point, it almost is hard to even comprehend
that there would be a political opposition to that. Have you had any Republicans that have come on and showed, hey, you know, this might be something I might be worth talking with you about?
No.
No. Really?
But I will say no. I mean, and this is something that we're just broaching. And a lot of this, you know, when we talk with the community, there was a lot of pushback about extreme risk protection order. Vets that were saying we fought for a country, we don't want to give up our guns. Other community members saying if we're concerned about, you know, if we think our guns are going to get taken away, we're not going to get mental health. And that's not what we wanted to do. The Gun Owners Caucus, again, credit where it's due, is willing to talk to us about what this looks like, the suicide prevention looks like. Out east, they have the Gun Shop Project, where gun shops voluntarily take people's guns when they're in a moment of crisis and hold on to them. So kind of trying to do it that way, from a holistic community approach. But as far as Republican legislators, they're focused on the election. They're focused on their talking points and not necessarily, in my opinion, focused on their constituents.
I will be remiss to say that I'm a little shocked that someone's like, okay, I'm not going to try to stop suicides. Okay. That's a little disheartening on that. And I understand what you're saying, but the reality is it's that kind of simple. It's like, okay, let's cut down on the suicide rate. Well, no, and I'm not going to discuss any other option on it. That doesn't feel like it doesn't even feel like it's even a possibility in today, but I guess that's where we're at today.
Well, and, you know, what we try to do is come at it from a mental health perspective. Like, mm-hmm. if you're afraid to talk about the firearm issue, let's just talk about the root cause of mental health. But it's always, again, that narrative that's been created. So even the idea of firearms. But like in rural Minnesota, the number of hangings are actually increasing as well. Sorry, mm-hmm. we should have put a trigger warning on this before. There's a mental health crisis, right? And the fear of even just touching the Second Amendment or even like being near it just shuts everyone down. And it's just mind-boggling because people are dying. And it's not just that one death. It's a community that's affected by it, right? The people that find the body or the family that's surviving. And it's just this horrible trauma that we're recreating communities and just, I don't know.
Well, and I can say I was in the military. First of all, this is me saying this is not you. I don't understand why there's military grade weaponry for sale in this country. If, you know, weapons that when they were sat down and people designed them were designed to kill as many human beings as quickly as possible. That makes no sense to me. But the reality is we are a Second Amendment country. I grew up in a hunting family. I have no problem with hunting weapons. I've said before many times, I would never own a personal defense pistol, but you know, you want to own one. That's fine. I can understand that to a point. But the reality is that I don't think it's really too odd considering that how lethal guns are. And they are insanely lethal. I have been around them a good chunk of my life. They are very lethal. I don't think there's any problem in saying, you know, a mental health evaluation before you get a gun is not a bad idea. And yet, you know, as you said, you can't even, as you approach this from the mental health side of it, here's the unfortunate news. The Republicans are not going to give you any money for mental health crises out in Minnesota either. That's just not part of their agenda. And so you've got a great idea, a phenomenal idea, but you're not going to get any help on either side of that, whether that's under, you know, common sense gun regulations or whether it's an expansion of mental health ideas, because the Republicans just don't want to push that. And that's got to be very frustrating.
You know, it really is, because coming at this and looking at the research and talking to communities, the answers seem so simple, right? But it's just these narratives that have been created, and I just, I don't know, I don't get it. There's something kind of almost wrong with humanity at this point, like, it's just after Newtown, like, how do you not do anything? That was the moment for me as a parent. I was like, those kids were slaughtered, and we have done nothing.
Yeah. Nope. I remember crying. I remember being at the bus stop waiting to go get my kids with tears coming down my cheeks, thinking about how did we allow this to happen? And the way they got rid of it is they basically convinced enough people it was a false flag operation. And so henceforth, nothing had to happen. That's a craziness.
And, you know, part of addressing like the mental health issue is that's always their thing, right? It's a mental health issue. Okay, so let's address it then, right? This isn't a one-approach problem. It's a multifaceted approach. It's going to depend on which community you're working with. And but there's just, it's an easy fix. We're all looking for an easy fix. but it's not.
It is not. Now, Roshini Sunavaretna, the executive director of Protect Minnesota, Rashmi, let's drive people. I mean, obviously, you and I could sit and talk about this for a 2-hour show easy. Because it's kind of, and just kind of the curious nature of it. Why hasn't this been done? And just, we could do it. We could do that hour after hour. The reality is though, you've got an agenda here. You got some good ideas. How do people find out more about your organization?
So you can visit our website, protectmn.org, and a lot of our stuff is now done through social media as well. So our Facebook and Twitter accounts, which you can find on our website. Otherwise, info@protectmn.org. I think the really biggest thing would be just to have these conversations, talk with your legislators, contact them, and vote people who actually give a damn.
You just said it perfectly. ProtectMN.org, ProtectMN.org. That's the website. Go visit that one and sign up. Rashmi, son of a retina. Rashmi, thank you very much. I so appreciate the time, and all my best to Protect Minnesota.
Thank you so much for having us. Have a good night.
You too. Take care. We'll take a break. Come on back. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Thanks very much, Rashmi, for joining us. Protect Minnesota, protectmn.org. is where you'll find more information about them. Speaking of which, let's give an update. A mayor and city, the council president are among those who have expressed their shock after the bodies of 5 family members and a dog were found in a home in Duluth on Wednesday. The discovery was made after a mental health welfare check was conducted at a home in Hermantown, with officers believing that the person subject of the welfare check had a weapon. This ultimately led police to check the home, a 700 block of East 12th Street in Duluth's East Side neighborhood. As of Thursday morning, the names of the victims have not been released, but details are beginning to emerge about the deceased. There has been reports the victims are believed to be a family of 4, with the fifth person found dead in the house believed to be a relative of theirs as well. It is in central emerged that an apparent confession was posted on Facebook prior to the discovery, with a man posting on a newly created account that intended to take his own life along with the lives of his aunt, uncle, and 2 cousins. At this time, it's not been confirmed that this post is genuine by any authorities in Duluth, nor the names mentioned in the poster are those of the deceased. Police are expected to provide more details on that on Thursday. On Wednesday evening, Duluth Mayor Emily Larson said, "Things happened today that can't be undone. Tonight, we are a community in pain and shock, sharing the sorrow of the loss of our people. Thank you to the first responders who answered the call. My heart, like yours, absolutely hurts the pain. The loved ones and we fear people likely experienced in the final day here with us." Her comments were echoed by Council President Eric Forsman and Vice President Janet Kennedy. "Our hearts will be shattered with these past 24 hours in Duluth. No family or community should have to go through such an unspeakable tragedy. It's hard to even put into words the sadness we feel as residents of Duluth. Our hearts and prayers and all we love go out to the family as well as the entire neighborhood. We're a strong city and we take care of each other, and we know we'll pull together as a community to support those who need our help right now." And obviously, just a horrific story out of Duluth that is, this stuff happens way too much, and it does. And you want to know the truth is, Rashmi and I were talking. It would do us a lot of good to have politicians who are saying, you know what, I'm not going to touch the Second Amendment. I'm not going to touch anything there. But we clearly cannot have mentally compromised people getting access to guns. So what we're going to do is immediately increase the volume of money going to mental health awareness and counseling in outstate Minnesota and in-state in the metro area, in the suburbs. Make sure that, and communicate when there is a problem to law enforcement and say, hey, we've got someone here we're paying attention to. They've been, comments about, hurting themselves, hurting others, keeping people aware of the situation, having a conversation, and maybe, God forbid, we actually help these people and maybe walk them back from that edge. That's not has nothing to do with Second Amendment or anything else. It has to do with the fact that we got a $9 billion freaking surplus, and we have a lot of people in the state of Minnesota who are hurting. And yet, the one thing for half the people in the state is to make sure millionaires and billionaires get as big of tax cuts as they can, as opposed to individuals in rural Minnesota getting the mental health care they need without having to drive 3 hours, 4 hours to go see a licensed therapist. It doesn't do us any good. And like I said, I remember that shooting in Buffalo at the hospital out there. And the first thing the cop said is, you know, hey, you know, he had a gun. The way the law is written, I can't stop him. And notice how no Republican stepped in and said, holy God, really? Well, let's fix that. Nope. Because the reality is, that's what they want. They want people seeing more gun violence because then they themselves might go get a gun. It's just the world that we live in. God forbid we actually go on out there and spend the money on mental health as we need to across the state of Minnesota. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Let's take a break. When we come on back, we're going to go to Democrat of the Day 4B. John Hest, kind enough to join us this afternoon. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Democrat of the day. We head up to 4B. John Hest is kind enough to join us. He's running for that seat. He's kind enough to take some time today to talk with us about his campaign. John, thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on, Matt. I appreciate it.
My absolute pleasure here. We should just let everyone know where 4B is. It's it's all the area, you know, goes over to Detroit Lakes, but it's the area not including Moorhead in that area, correct?
Right.
It'd be a good way to describe
right.
it, right?
Yep. It's all of Clay County with the exception of kind of the core of Moorhead and then a little bit of the rural northeast corner and then a bit of Becker County stretching out to Detroit Lakes. Yep.
Yeah. This is DFL. I think this is DFL territory, and it's one of those seats which, you know, Republicans are looking at you. They're going to be targeting this race. This is why I want a lot of people here. This summer, we need door knockers. We need people to go up to 4B and go and campaign for John. This is going to be a big key. Let's give everyone an idea exactly who is John Hest.
Yeah. Thank you so much for the chance. So my name is John Hest. Like Matt said, I grew up on my family's farm up here in rural Norman County, just north of Fargo-Moorhead. I'm the fifth generation on my family's farm, so very familiar with issues facing family farmers and those in the ag industry. I have been very active with the Minnesota Farmers Union, lobbying on those issues affecting farmers in our state and rural communities more generally, both in St. Paul and D.C. Most of my career has been spent working in higher ed, so I work at M-State Community and Tech College in Moorhead at the moment, helping students as an academic advisor there, helping them find college success. I also, kind of moonlight as a history and government teacher for some online classes at a tribal college in South Dakota. So that's my academic background in history. And I've seen, I've seen firsthand the issues facing students. I've seen the issues facing parents in our rural districts. And I'm part of the reason I'm running is to fight for those students and parents and ensure they have access to that high quality, affordable public education all the way from pre-K to university. I'm also a proud member of MAPE Local 1502, one of the state employee unions. I serve on our meet and confer, so I'm meeting with administration to bring forward issues facing our members and hear from them about ongoing issues. I'm running also to ensure that unions are protected and that we're fighting for working people in St. Paul. Like I said, all of the above, I'm running for family farmers like my dad and my brother. I'm running to support my students. I'm running for, adult children of aging parents trying to find elder care for their mom or dad. I'm running for the entrepreneur in their head, a passion for their community. Most of all, I'm running for my daughter and all of our kids up here to have access to the same world-class education, beautiful surroundings, caring community that combined to make my childhood here so great. So Yeah, thanks so much for having me on, Matt.
My pleasure. Let's break down a few of the things we just talked about. Let's get to the farmers first. Margins are god awful. It's something where you've got a lot of problems out there. It's a little bit better. I mean, one of the things from the offshoots of the Ukrainian war is that there's going to be a bit of a higher demand on some of the U.S. crops here that's there. But still, our margins for the family farmer are really bad. It does not help that many people have had to deal with a pandemic as well. Talk about how would you like to address the margin issue and allow farmers to be farmers without having to have three other jobs to make sure they can make it?
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a lot that the state can do to help those family farms, make up, increase those margins a bit, ensure they're able to make a living wage. I think part of it that we don't always talk about is healthcare. I think, farmers, often they need a spouse or themselves working off the farm just so they can have access to health insurance, right? Mm-hmm. So something like a public option, I think, is a great place to start. So allowing farmers to buy into our state health insurance, I think, would be a great thing to help them have access to a high quality, low cost health care. I also think, part of it, too, is that especially young farmers like my brother and others of his generation, they have to go into so much debt just to start, if you have a couple of bad years, you can't push through it. You're stuck because you're having to take out these huge loans to pay for land and equipment and your inputs and all that kind of stuff. So, there's been this beginning farmer tax credit that we've done that, my predecessor, Paul Marquardt, was instrumental in it. It's helpful, but I really think there's more we can do in providing some grants and tax breaks and those kinds of things to encourage young folks. So that's another issue with farming, is that it's an aging industry for sure. So, yeah.
Let's bring that back then to another thing that you'd mentioned about higher education, because I think there is one of the things that I think gets ignored, and I've lived in rural America numerous times, is that the idea of college or a second, a higher education past high school is a different question when you get into rural America, because you want to bring people back. You want people to take over the farm or be in the auxiliary businesses that help support the agricultural industry. And generally, sometimes I don't know if the higher education system supports that. Talk a little bit about that and the idea of higher education from the perspective of the rural Minnesota student.
Sure. Yeah, that's a great question, because it is an issue. I'm one who did, I left the University of Minnesota in the cities and then came back. So I'm one of those students. But it is, because I do think sometimes you get this impression from rural communities that, these colleges and universities in bigger cities are, to some extent, like stealing their young people or something like that, where they're, drawing them out and then they don't come back, right? So I think there's a lot we can do to ensure that they stick. For one thing, high quality rural higher education we've got some fantastic community and technical colleges in the state of Minnesota. Mm-hmm. So ensuring that those are fully funded, that students have access to those programs, that they can then turn around and use those skills within their communities, right? So things like trades, transfer programs where they, start out at the local school and then maybe transition and then can come back a little easier. Some of that kind of stuff is a huge thing, and ensuring we're funding those programs fully and those colleges fully, because I've seen firsthand some of the challenges that you look at Minnesota State's bonding proposal, and it's band-aid for systems that have been busted for years. It's not expansion, it's not growth, it's trying to fix stuff that's falling apart. So investing in those and ensuring those students have opportunities locally, I think, is a huge part of it. And then also, investing, because I do think that there's still, farmers appreciate the work that happens at research universities and places like that, right? They grow University of Minnesota wheat strains or, mm-hmm. or apples or other crops or what have you. So they appreciate that work. And extension is an integral part of our rural communities. Just ensuring that, we have, that strong network of extension education that continues, ensuring that, we're investing in agricultural research and keeping the University of Minnesota system and our Minnesota State system schools at the top of the pile when it comes to research in agriculture. There's a lot we can do. We've got some great public schools in the state, and I want to make sure we keep it that way.
John Hess joining us, Democrat of the Day, 4B up in the northwest part of the state. As a matter of fact, as I look at a map of your district, let's get into a little bit of the climate change issue, because I would be remiss if I didn't point out the entire western, a good chunk of your western side of your district, borders on the Red River of the North, which is a continual flooding problem. Imagine it's getting a little concerning right now as the spring melt is going on. Georgetown and Oakport, Comstock, as well as the community of Moorhead itself and the surrounding communities there. This is a recurring problem, and once again, we're getting this. We've just seen the last month. I mean, you guys have been hammered with extra fluid coming out of the sky. This is a big problem, especially when you're looking at those communities right on that river.
Right. Yeah, we've been, you know, somewhat lucky this year in that we were so dry from last year still that, you know, the ground sucked up a lot of that excess moisture. But yeah, flood mitigation is a huge issue, too. I mean, we need to, and the ongoing diversion projects and things like that have been great, and they've been, you know, buying out some of the landowners and in particularly vulnerable areas. But yeah, we need to ensure that we have that we're fully funding those efforts and continue those efforts. So, and that's, you know, that's not necessarily something that the state is taking the charge on. That's, you know, the Army Corps, and there's local but you know, we certainly have a role to play in that fight. So, yeah, ensuring that we're at the table, ensuring that we're doing everything we can so that you know, that folks can continue to live here and not have to worry about you know, flooding every year. Yeah.
Well, and I think the state definitely could step up when it comes to, you know, when it comes to buffer zones to make sure that the cropland is not getting flooded and better drainage issues there. I don't know. It is a tough river. I mean, you're going north. And so it is a little bit until they kind of start thawing up there by Winnipeg. It becomes a little bit of an issue. But I guess, you know, that it is one of those things where I think a big issue that we need to bring more light to, because that's an issue for the most part we don't get a lot of here in the Twin Cities, but it is an issue that every year affects these communities. And especially if you've got a nice piece of farmland and you're near that river, you're keeping an eye on those flood levels every single year.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's affecting, you know, plant dates, it's affecting, you know, the obviously the moisture of the soil and your ability to start planting. Yeah, it's an issue, but I mean, it's part of the reason why we're blessed with such high quality soil is because we get that silt from the river. But we need to make sure we're doing everything we can to mitigate that flooding.
One last issue I want to bring up with you, something you kind of mentioned, and I think this is something that escapes a lot of people too, and I'm glad you mentioned it, and that's elder care. You have an aging population in rural Minnesota. We just had a great example of the inadequacies of the healthcare industry in rural Minnesota with this pandemic here. There's a lot we can do and we need to do about this. Talk a little bit more about making sure that the elderly population of Minnesota has what they need in regards to the healthcare industry.
Yeah, sure. I think there's a lot we can do. I mean, part of it is just ensuring that we have enough providers to staff these you know, nursing homes and assisted livings and other senior care facilities, which leads back to fully funding our community and tech colleges as well as our state colleges, because they're literally in many places they've got the facilities, they've got the demand, but they just don't have the folks to staff them. So, so I think, you know, part of like the governor's efforts to offer some free CNA courses and that kind of stuff was great. I would love to see that continued and expanded to ensure we have enough CNAs out here to staff some of those places. I also think there's more we can do with some of the student loan forgiveness and some of that kind of stuff to ensure, again, that folks are entering those high need fields and able to afford to enter them and stay in communities. I also think there's you know, plenty more we can do in regards to healthcare infrastructure too. I mean, you know, we've got you've had consolidations, you've had clinics closing, you've had, you know, it's hard. It's understandable if you're one of these giant healthcare companies. You know, a rural clinic is not a big moneymaker, right? It serves a vital service to its community, but it's not making money hand over fist by any stretch. So just ensuring that the state's doing everything it can to ensure that, you know, there's different things I think we can do just to ensure that either those companies are incentivized to keep those clinics open and staffed and offering vital services, or to somehow, you know, incentivize the creation of, like, you know, cooperative community-based healthcare. I think there's some opportunity there, too. So,
Yeah, I agree with you. I think wholeheartedly, you got to look at, you know, the salaries too. You know, the people. I mean, yep. You're asking them to take care of the greatest generation right now. That's who's in, that's in a lot right. of these senior centers. That's the greatest generation.
Right.
It should not be this job or I work at Arby's. It should be something where right. We're absolutely. Paying these people considering what they're dealing with. It is a far larger issue. And so I agree wholeheartedly with that. And maybe yeah. more encouragement of trade schools or nursing schools, whatever the school we need that, you know, will cover some of the tuition on that to get the people into those buildings.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I think part of, yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think we need to ensure that the wages are where they need to be and, you know, make sure that these folks have access to, if they want to organize unions, they have access to that kind of stuff too, right? Yeah. To fight for themselves. So that's absolutely. Piece of it too that I think is missing in a lot of parts of rural Minnesota.
John Hest, I got to give you credit on one thing, John. I've seen cute family pictures on a website, but holy God, man, you got a cute family, man. That's a great photo of you on your website.
Thank you.
Yes. I want to drive people to this. I want, go see the picture. It's a cute picture. John, what's the website people should go to find out about your campaign?
Yeah. Yeah. So my website, it's just Hest for House, HestForHouse.com. And it's the same on all social media. So Facebook.com/HestForHouse, Twitter.com/HestForHouse, secure.actblue.com/donate/HestForHouse. And there's a donate button on the website too. That's probably a little easier, but there's my daughter just turned her cute. So I definitely recommend that.
It's adorable. That's a great one. That actually might be the best one I've seen. Nicely done, sir. John Hest, 4B. Okay. So you've heard him. You need to get up there. Now, first of all, donations help. That's a big district. He's got a lot of driving to do.
Yep.
Get up there and make a donation if you can. You also need to get up there and door knock. And this is not a joke, people. Help your local DFLer. But if you're in one of these safe districts where it's a slam dunk, the DFL is going to win, get up to 4B. This is a seat Republicans are going to throw everything they can at to try to get. John's a great candidate. Yep. We need him in St. Paul. If you door knock on every door in that district, the DFL will win, and that's the key. So this summer, get up there. Have some fun. It's a great part of the state as well. HestForHouse.com. Donate, volunteer. John, all my best. Thank you very much. I appreciate the time today.
Yeah, thank you so much, Matt, for having me on.
My absolute pleasure. John Hest, Hest for Minnesota House 4B, HestForHouse.com, HestForHouse.com. I'll link to everything on social media a little bit later on. Let's take a break. Come on back. Final segment when we do return. It's the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950. Yeah, I personally don't think that the decision should be, well, I could go make beef and cheddars over at Arby's. Or I could take care of the old farmer that's now in the senior home. Which one should I do? I don't think those two things should be an equal to question. I think that there should be a difference there. That's just me. I think that we should cherish the people that are working with our elderly and making sure their final days are as safe as they possibly can be, more than the guy doing the beef and cheddar. That's just me. Just me, 952-946-6205. By the way, Patrick, first of all, let me mention Native Roots Radio, I Am Awake, coming up here, 6 o'clock hour. Robert Pilot and crew, fantastic. Gina Peltier, she's fantastic, filling in for Ogama with Ogama on vacation, or at vacation. Excuse me. Let me walk that one back. On maternity leave. On maternity leave. Ogama, all my best. I miss you, my friend. I hope things are going great for you there. While she is out, Gina's doing a great job filling in. Make sure you're listening the 6 o'clock hour right here on AM 950. So going back to the fast food discussion, there is an interesting bit of research going on at the University of Minnesota. And I'm going to just read this. This is a story that's in the Star Tribune, but I'm just going to focus on this, you know, a little bit here. Looking at the dozen fast food restaurants on West Broadway, is what we want? Is that what we want? Is the fast food what we want because that's how we eat, or do we eat it because it's here and those are our options? That's a good question. And, you know, so we here at the Palatial Radio Broadcasting Complex, we're out here in Eden Prairie, We try to catch as many fish out of Bryant Lake, which is out our back door, as we can. They're not been biting lately, just FYI. But when we're not dining on fish here at the station, delicious fish. The reality is we got a pretty much a wide selection of options around us. And so we go there. But the question is that do you go there because you want to go there? That you say to yourself, I want a slider from White Castle. Okay. Or are you going there because, okay, I got 20 minutes to go get food. The nearest place, I'll just go over here and I'll get that there. Now, here's one little bit. What intrigued me about this is years ago, I was working in Ames, Iowa. Hot 105 KCCQ. I didn't sound nearly that good back then. I was more like, Hot 105 KCCQ. I mean, I really sucked back then. But I kind of sucked today. But I mean, still, I sucked more back then. That being said, I was doing radio down there, and I finally just said, I was starting to put on the pounds, and I said, all right, I got to give up the fast food. And one of the things I noticed, and this blew my freaking mind, was all of a sudden I was having like insane cravings for fast food to the point where I was like, what was in that stuff that made me want to go get it so bad? Like, oh, there's a drive-thru right over there. Look at that. Not even a car in there. Could drive in there, get myself one. Oh, I'll go get one now. I'm not going to deny that based on a true story, kids. No, I noticed that. And to a point, I think your body, if it gets used to eating that stuff, it's hard to get away from it. And so that to a point goes, that's what we want. It's because that's how we eat. We just kind of get into that mode. You're eating it. But once you start figuring out the options that are not fast food, then it becomes easier. But I swear to God, a year after I gave up fast food, a year I was still having cravings for fast food. It was weird. I mean, weird. You know, honey, you know what I could go for right now? I never thought I would be able to understand Donald Trump's and cheeseburger bedtime cheeseburger routine. Actually, no, I have dignity, for God's sakes. I'm not rolling around in the king size with, you know, a box of King Juniors from BK. No. Ugh. Can you imagine the cleaning bills on those mattresses? Sweet Jesus. I think you just take them on back and light them on fire. And I mean, it's going to burn bright too when you got rid of those mattresses. But needless to say, no, I find that to be a fascinating question. Do you eat the fast food because that's really what you want? Because that's how we eat as Americans. Or do you eat fast food because that's the options? Another funny quick story too. And I got to do this really quick. I went over to Ireland one time and I went to visit some friends and I met the father of one of my dear friends, and he was insisting, oh, let me take you out on a trip. We'll go get some food. You know, we'll just go get something. So we go on out. He takes me to what's called Supermax, which was the Irish equivalent of a fast food restaurant, because I think that's what he thought my natural habitat was. Well, I'll get you a Budweiser too. That's what you guys like to drink. No, I'm in Ireland. Give me a Guinness. I'll be fascinated to read that study. Native Roots up next. Have a good one. We're back on a Friday. Till then, see ya.